There have been many over the ages who have claimed that the end was nigh, that a catastrophe was imminent, that it would bring widespread loss of life, as can be seen in the warning given by Wolfstan II, Archbishop of York, in 1014. Beloved men, recognize what the truth is. This world is in haste and it is drawing near its end. Non-geologically speaking, as there is a more well-founded form of catastrophism within geology, I'm here to speak about some of the new catastrophists that are currently deluging the internet and chat forums, YouTube, Facebook, etc., with tales of impending doom, whole ships and consequent massive loss of life across our planet. In particular, I'm going to speak about a branch of catastrophists that believe that there is a celestial object called Nibiru that will fly by Earth and cause mayhem in its wake. There are two major streams of Nibiru belief, and they are led in the main by two people, Nancy Leider and Zechariah Sitchin. The idea that there is a celestial body called Nibiru, however, originates with Zechariah Sitchin. Mr. Sitchin is a self-proclaimed but formally unqualified expert at translating Sumerian and Akkadian cuneiform tablets. He was born in Baku, Azerbaijan, and grew up in British-mandated Palestine. He does have a bachelor's degree in economic history from the London School of Economics, but as far as can be discerned, he has no formal qualifications in any ancient Semitic language, nor in Sumerian. Sumerian, I should add, is a language isolate. It is not a Semitic language, but a language group all by itself. Akkadian, however, which is the other language relevant to ancient Sumeria, is a Semitic language. The fact that Sitchin can speak a modern Semitic language due to the fact that he grew up in Palestine is as insufficient a qualification for being an expert in ancient Semitic languages as our ability to speak and read modern English does not qualify nor enable us to translate Anglo-Saxon. According to Sitchin, the ancient Sumerians knew of an extra planet beyond Pluto. This extra planet was called Nibiru. Sitchin goes on to claim that Nibiru passes through our solar system every 3,600 years. Further, he also claims that the Anunnaki, a race of powerful beings that allegedly created the Sumerian culture and genetically engineered humanity to serve as slave labourers in their gold mines, and that these Anunnaki actually live on Nibiru. According to Sitchin, the Anunnaki required large quantities of gold for their technology to function. Sitchin's argument is predicated upon a few claims, which, if shown to be false, negates his entire claim regarding Nibiru. This scroll here is called VA243. Sitchin claims, based upon the scroll, so called because it's number 243 in the collection of the Vorderasiatische Museum in Berlin, that the ancient Sumerians had advanced knowledge of the solar system that was given to them by the Anunnaki. You'll see up in the corner up here, there's what looks to be like a star symbol followed, surrounded by some dots. Sitchin claims that that star symbol is the sun and that those dots are our planets and that they are all in scale and include Pluto. Yeah, now that's a bit difficult to grasp that one because, number one, well, Jupiter by volume is 318 times the volume of Earth, and I don't see any difference in scale of about 318 times there, let alone Pluto, which is smaller than our moon. Okay, one sees a star sits around by 11 globes. Sitchin infers from this that the ancient Sumerians knew of an extra planet beyond Pluto. He calls this planet Nibiru. The problem with this idea, though, is that the symbol that Sitchin believes is the sun is actually the Sumerian symbol for a star. To claim otherwise is to contradict every other known example of Sumerian iconography. I'll give you an example. Please note that the wavy lines on the symbol on the left, that's the Sumerian, this one here is the Sumerian sun symbol. This one here is the Sumerian star symbol, and that is consistent right across every other known piece of iconography from Sumeria. Nibiru is, however, a genuine Akkadian astronomical term. It translates as crossing or point of transition, especially of rivers. Astronomically, the term refers to the highest point of the ecliptic, that is, the summer solstice. The establishment of the Nibiru point is described in Tablet 5 of the creation epic Enuma Elish, when Marduk fixed the locations, Manzazu, of Nibiru, Enlil, and Ea in the sky. That's part of the creation story of ancient Sumeria. What Sitchin gets wrong, though, is the idea that Nibiru is somehow a planet itself. In actual Sumerian and or Akkadian practice, the term Nibiru can apply to any planet, but usually Mercury or Jupiter, when either is in the crossing position, that is, in the highest point of the ecliptic. Another critical point of Sitchin's translations of Sumerian and Akkadian is where he translates the words Nephilim, because he equates Nephilim with the Anunnaki. In his book, Stairway to Heaven, Sitchin quotes from a Dead Sea Scroll called Genesis Apocryphon 110-112. He needs to defend his idea that Nephilim and the sons of God are the same. He writes, "But as we examine the Hebrew original, we find it does not say watches, it says Nephilim." The quotation shows that Sitchin did not know the Qumran text was actually written in Aramaic, not Hebrew, and he has mistranslated it, for the word watches is actually in the text. He quotes "and" in his fiction in his book. That's like making a mistake between modern English and, again, Anglo-Saxon. There is another key word that Sitchin has mistranslated, the word phrase Shu Mu, on pages 140-143 of his book, The Twelfth Planet. We read that Sitchin defines the Sumerian Mu as an oval-topped conical object and that which rises straight. Sitchin interprets this as the spaceship that is obviously needed to bring the Anunnaki from Nibiru to Earth. He goes on to claim that the Sumerian symbol Mu was adopted into Semitic languages as Shumu, which he translates as that which is a Mu, by implication that which is a rocket ship. Allegedly, Shumu then morphed into Akkadian Shamu and the biblical Hebrew Shem. Does Akkadian Shamu come from Sitchin's Shumu? Does Sumerian even have a word that means that which is a Mu? Contrary to Mr. Sitchin, Akkadian Shamu does not derive from Shumu, nor does Shamu mean that which is a Mu. Sitchin's translation of Shumu presupposes that Shu is what called in grammar a relative pronoun, the classification of all pronouns, or pronouns in all languages that mean that which. Mr. Sitchin is apparently unaware of Sumerian grammar at this point, because the Sumerian language does not have a class of pronouns that are relative pronouns. There are Sumerian grammar references that bear this out. For example, John L. Hayes' A Manual of Sumerian Grammar. If you go looking it up on the net, you will find it. It's online. Second, there are no texts in Sumerian and Akkadian that have rocket, or fiery rocket, or cone shape, or shamu. In my debates with those who cite Sitchin as their authority regarding Nibiru, I asked them to find a single professional Semitologist who agrees with Sitchin's translations. I already know that they will not find one, because Sitchin doesn't even agree with the still extant Sumerian and Akkadian lexical lists comprised by the scribes at the time, and thanks to the internet, are available to anyone, including Mr. Sitchin. I wish at this point to give credit to Dr. Michael Heiser, who earned his PhD in Hebrew, Bible, and Semitic languages. I've sourced most of my critiques of Sitchin from Dr. Heiser. I could rest at this point, because Sitchin, who is, as I said earlier, the progenitor of the entire Nibiru will return school of thought, is satisfactorily debunked by reference to linguistic arguments alone. But any discussion about the relative merits or lack thereof ought to include a discussion of the arguments claims made by Nancy Leider. Nancy Leider describes herself as a contactee with the ability to receive messages from extraterrestrials from the Zeta Reticuli star system through an implant in her brain. She states that she was chosen to warn mankind that the object would sweep through the inner solar system in May 2003, though that date was later abandoned, causing Earth to undergo a pole shift that would destroy most of humanity. The predicted collision has subsequently spread beyond Leider's website and has been embraced by numerous internet doomsday groups, most of which link the event to the 2012 phenomenon related to the Mayan calendar that I'm sure you've all heard about. Although the name Nibiru is derived from the works of ancient astronaut writer Zechariah Sitchin and his interpretations of Babylonian and Sumerian mythology, Sitchin himself denies any connection between his work and various claims of the coming apocalypse. Leiter describes Nibiru as roughly four times the size of Earth and said that its perigee would occur on May 27, 2003, resulting in the Earth's rotation ceasing for exactly 5.9 terrestrial days. This would be followed by the Earth's pole destabilizing in a pole shift, a physical pole shift, with the Earth's pole physically moving rather than the geomagnetic reversal, caused by magnetic attraction between the Earth's core and magnetism of the passing planet. This would in turn would disrupt the Earth's magnetic core and lead to subsequent displacement of the Earth's crust. Okay, just for a moment, I will play you a clip of Nancy Leiter in an interview with an American radio station. She gives advice that you should euthanize your pets prior to 2003 because that's the kindest thing to do to them. Here we go.
Now, what about, last question for me, Nancy, and you're terrific to talk to us here today, but what about our listeners who have followed your advice and taken their dogs to Puppy Lake because of the impending collapse of America? What happens to them now?
The puppies didn't think that anything worse was happening to them than getting their annual rabies shot, and it didn't feel any different to them.
I mean, so they're in a happy place now, okay.
No, I mean, they're in a happy place.
Okay.
I suspect there's a nice place
in
puppy heaven for those puppies.
Was that really your advice?
I hope you remember it. You weren't really advising people to drop their dogs, were you?
Yeah.
You were?
Yeah. Well, and the fact is, they're going to starve or be injured, and they're going to be in a worse situation.
What if you're wrong, though, and somebody has killed their dog, though?
I love dogs. You have to know.
Well,
when I get a dog, it's my lap, baby. Even I have German shepherds, and they sit on my
right.
lap.
Have you killed your dogs?
You just take them to the vet, and they give them a shot.
Have you done that? Did you do that?
This has turned ugly.
Yes.
Way to go, B.
You did.
Yeah,
wow.
To them. Right,
wait a minute.
Stroke their little nose.
Nancy, how old were your dogs when you took them to put them down?
Oh, this one was only 18 months.
Oh,
yeah.
Miss.
But if you can go to a safe place, why don't you just take your dogs with you?
Because what are you going to feed those dogs? What if there's a food shortage and all your neighbors can't go to the grocery store and they hunted down the wildlife to nothing? They're going to, you know, a dog makes a good meal.
Oh, I was so on board with you, baby, until right now. Now, Nancy, I'm sure that you meet with people every day that think that you are just full-blown nuts.
Oh, yeah.
What do you say to them?
I don't care what you think. I'm getting the message out. It's take it or leave it. It's your business. It's your life. But I feel sorry for anybody who has small children who's going to not at least keep an eye out for that day to be hours late.
Okay.
You know?
All right, this is great time.
You have to go to puppy heaven, you know, at that point in time.
Oh, good. Yes,
you know, I never said do it now. I said do it before the
phone. JadaTalk.com. Nancy, we'll talk to you in a week. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Wow! Did that just be
horribly
ugly?
He said that.
I was joking. He was joking about puppy leg. And all of a sudden, I asked her. She says, yeah, that's what I say.
There you have it. As we are aware, Nibiru did not arrive in 2003, and after the predicted 2003 date passed without incident, Leiter said that it was merely a white lie from the Zeta Reticulans to fool the establishment. Why aliens thousands of light years away give us stuff while the people in power here think, I don't know. But anyway, they said that they discussed the true date would give those in power enough time to declare martial law and trap people in cities during the shift, leading to their deaths. Why then did Leiter euthanize your dog in 2003 if 2003 date was a white lie? I have another video. This is the sort of stuff that she pumps out to her camp followers.
This is Nancy Leiter on the Zeta Report.
happens within an hour, forcing the Earth's crust to move 90 degrees as it drags along the magnetic core of the Earth, which is desperately trying to align with Planet X, that bully magnetic planet passing overhead. When it's over, North will have become West, and the former poles will be on the equator. What happens during this hour? The Earth moves under her blanket of air and water. This causes hurricane-force winds worldwide and immense sloshing of the oceans. Tsunami on occasion assaults the coastline, but the tidal wave caused by the pole shift is larger, pushing further inland and rising higher than tsunami. The general guideline is to be 100 miles in from the coastline and 200 feet above sea level. All coastlines are thus unsafe, but especially vulnerable are those cities on the water's edge, like New York City, Miami, LA, Hong Kong, Sydney, Osaka, Rio de Janeiro. Oh my, the list just goes on and on. River bottom lands are particularly vulnerable, even when inland. Hurricane winds bring torrential rain, with rivers backing up and unable to drain. Imagine your peaceful river valley flooded, as Burma was recently by a cyclone, taking weeks to drain. So water on the move is very scary, and being in a safe location definitely includes being on high ground. Anything else? Best to put yourself at least 100 miles away from any volcano likely to erupt. And for the Zetas, this includes any volcano active within the last 10,000 years. Volcanic ash certainly is unhealthy and can bury communities nearby. Heavy metals in the ash can poison drinking water, and the gloom makes gardening a near impossibility. Plan to be downwind from erupting volcanoes. And remember, the new prevailing westerlies will be blowing from what used to be north. When a volcano that had been asleep for over 9,000 years blew recently in Chile, the ash blew all the way across Argentina. Okay, so I'm off the coast and I'm on high ground, and I'm staying out of the wind drift from the volcanoes. Anything else? Some places have special vulnerability, such as flatland when tornadoes can form in the whipping wind. Tornadoes stay above ground and rise over the hills. So being in a valley between hills or in a storm shelter below ground helps. Some places are particularly vulnerable to ocean sloshing, such as the inland valley of California, which for the Zetas will flood and stay flooded for weeks. The water coming in from the Pacific during the hour of the shift will roll right over the coastal mountains and pool in the valley. When the ocean sloshing encounters flat land, such as the land in eastern Texas that goes on and on like a pancake, the tidal waves rolling in have no reason to stop. For the Zetas, Texas will be flooded all the way to the highlands, leaving Dallas flooded for weeks. How do I know if I'm in one of those special locations that is particularly worrisome? Read the safe locations documentation. This is a link on the menu on the ZetaTalk website. The Zetas have given hundreds of advisements about locations worldwide, and this is compiled into a document there. For instance, idyllic Caribbean islands. Just where would you go in the hour of the pole shift?
I think we've probably had enough of that. What LIDAR has done is to conflate Sitchin's Nibiru ideas with the New Age pseudo-Mayan idea that 2012 is the end of the world, along with certain other astronomical findings that have been misreported in the media. In particular, the report in the Washington Post that in 1983, Nibiru was spotted by two NASA astronomers, Neugebauer and Holt. He used the infrared astronomy satellite, IRIS, and found a Jupiter-sized object a few billion kilometers out from the Sun. Phil Plait of the Bad Astronomy website states that he directly emailed Neugebauer and Hulk asking specifically about the 83, the result. The reply he got was, IRIS was designed to look into the far infrared, well past what our eyes see. At the time, nobody was really sure what it would find. To everyone's surprise, several bright point sources were found that did not correspond to anything seen on optical images taken of the same areas. In the press conference, the two scientists said that these objects could be almost anything, from a tenth planet in our solar system to distant galaxies. Subsequent to this, much deeper images were taken which established that some of the objects were found to be dense gas clouds within our own galaxy, whilst others turned out to be very distant galaxies. None of them were as yet unknown planets within our own solar system. But of course, within the there is a conspiracy and the government is out to get us crew. Their viewpoint was, you saw Nibiru and now you're covering it up. It needs to be pointed out that if it were true that there was a planet that is roughly four times the size of Earth, that's on a 3,600 year orbit around our sun, that is due near Earth in late December 2012, that it would be, given that we are right now only 728 days away from Nibiru causing pole shifts, mass extinctions, etc., we should easily be able to see it right now with our naked eye, but we can't. Therefore, Nibiru doesn't exist, and we can all rest easy in the knowledge that in all likelihood, 21st of December 2012 will be a warm summer day here in New Zealand. Okay.
I should check with Kim.
Say again?
The weather, yeah.
Okay, there's my credits. Dr. Michael Heiser, who is a genuine Scientologist. Phil Plate, badastronomy.com. You might be interested to look at that from a skeptical perspective anyway. And for reasons of balance and fairness, I've included Nancy Leiter's website. I find it quite alternatively infuriating and entertaining at the same time. The most amusing page is her What the Zeta Reticulans Say About Our Science. Because like what she's claiming is astronomically impossible from a physical perspective. There's no way that a planet could orbit in the way that it is orbiting without it being excluded from our solar system by Jupiter on a second pass through. But anyway, any questions?
Have you any information about May the 21st, 2011? Because I was told by a young man with a long white beard on the free speech plaza at Berkeley 2 weeks ago that is the day, according to his biblical calculations. And this was confirmed by two very nice young black women in San Diego last week. So it must be quite widespread. It's also interesting that your Nancy Leader and others seem to be, the Zeta Reticulans seem to be particularly concerned about the United States of America.
No, I'm sorry, I don't have any information on that too much, except to say that I have gone looking for main support for these 2012 apocalypse ideas, and the actual Mayans are getting rather irritated that these Western New Age types are using their calendar as for their own agenda. I mean, the reason why the calendar ends there pretty much is that the Mayans are crushed by the Spanish, and to sort of go on about it reminds them of that loss. I mean, if they were still the dominant culture of Mesoamerica that they once were, then their culture, then their calendar would carry on, just like our calendar will become 2011 and 2012 and so on and so on.